The following episode of A Taste of the Past has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palaccio, here on Heritage Radio Network. And 'tis the season to be jolly. We are in the throes of the holiday season here, and what else should we talk about but imbibing? But Imbibe was the title of his last book, and I'm very happy to have with me today David Wondrich, who has just published a new book called Punch.
But we're not talking about punching, no.
So we're going to talk about the history of punch and, what do you call it, the delights and the dangers of the flowing bowl.
Absolutely. Both well attested to.
Dave is an award-winning journalist and author. He got the James Beard Award for his last book, Imbibe, and has accomplished all kinds of wonderful things in the world of mixology. I know you don't particularly care for the word mixologist.
Oh, I actually like that
do
one.
Do you? I thought that was something you weren't, you know, I know you're a doctor of English literature, but I call you the doctor of mixology. I mean, you are the cocktail master of all sorts. So,
thank you.
This book is I particularly like this book because it does have such wonderful tales in it and wonderful history, as well as recipes, which is, you know, for different punches, which is very nice.
It makes history come alive.
That's right. All right. Well, I have to start out here by reading the invocation. Okay. Now imagine a mixologist in the pulpit. Right. In the age of chaos, long before the creation of the cocktail, spiritus and aqueous, thick and thin, sweet and sharp and unctuous, were all tumbled together in the undifferentiated mass without form or order. Then, from the east, there rose a sun to dry the wet and distill the light from the heavy. And then all drinks began to know their proper kinds and submit to the willfulness of their doing, to the correction of just reason. That sun had a name, and that name was Punch. Wow, how did you come up with that? Now, is that yours? That is a wonderful beginning to any book.
Well, thank you. I was just, you know, I was playing around, and I just had to, I'd been reading Ovid's Metamorphoses, which more or less start like that, and
right.
And I just had to do it just because, just for the fun of it, you know.
Well, I will say this book is a delight, and it is not quite as evangelical as the beginning is, but
it does tone down a little bit, at least for much of it. Yes.
So tell me what drove you to write about Punch? Now, I had you on this show a year ago. We were talking about Punch and the history of Punch, because you've been talking about the history of Punch for several years now.
Well, actually, you're one of the first people who got me going on this, for which I wish to thank you.
For the culinary historians.
We did a big Punch event, and I went and got a bunch of Arak from Germany and all this stuff, and it really, the success of that helped contribute to my deciding that I should really focus on this a little more.
Well, you know, people always kind of recoil when you say punch because they think of those sickeningly sweet things from bridal showers and school dances and you know, this is not
fraternity parties,
right.
You know.
This is not what we're talking about.
Yeah, its good name has gotten dragged through the dust, but it used to be, originally, it was a very simple drink that anyone could make. It didn't have all the fancy stuff in it, and at the same time, it was made with good ingredients and natural ingredients. There were no canned ingredients or anything like that. There was no canned juices, no frozen lime slush or any of the stuff that people put in punch these days. All that stuff didn't exist. It was a very simple drink made out of citrus juice and sugar and water and whatever spirits were available and a little bit of spice. That was all there was to it.
Well, why the name punch? Do you know anything about the etymology of punch?
Oh, boy. Well, the standard story is it comes from the Hindi panch, which means five, but because it was made in India first. And you go and you dig through the old colonial sources of the records of the British East India Company and the travel accounts of English travelers there, because everybody considered it an English drink back in the 1600s. And you find that there's only one guy who says that it's punch, the Indian word, and he's reasoning by analogy from ancient Greek, an educated young doctor who spent, you know, only a couple months in India and really just stated this as his opinion. There was no fact that he based it on, but it got into the sort of the literature and it became the standard explanation. But you look very hard and there is no Indian drink made just like it. Even, you know, Indian scholars have looked, and I have a wonderful book by an Indian scholar on drinks of the Mughal Empire. And there's nothing like punch in there. So I suspect it's the good old English word punch comes from puncheon, which means a short, squat barrel. And that's what it was mixed in. So that seems to be the best explanation. So.
And of course, most people think it's because a drink that sneaks up at you and punches fires you in the, a punch.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And punches you in the back of the head, which which it will do.
Well, now you mentioned the 1600s. So take us back and tell us a little bit about the beginnings and the history of what we know from punch.
Like the history of all mixed drinks are all really good ones. It's very murky.
The memories were
a little short. There's a lot of exaggeration and just making stuff up to cover the blackouts. So we don't know. Also, what we do know is it first appears among English sailors and merchants in India and the East Indies, India, Indonesia, in those waters in the early 1600s. Who invented it actually, we may never know. Many of those people had very short lives. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a dangerous trade and mortality was high. It's quite possible that everybody who invented it died before they could get their invention acknowledged. But it spread virally among sailors.
And some of the earliest punches, I mean, in other words, why we think, well, to mask some of the harsh.
Well, I think it was even more desperate than that. English sailors were allowed a gallon of beer a day in their ration. And it was actually a large gallon. It was 5 quarts because beer is foamy and nobody wants to pay for foam.
That's right.
So the beer gallon was 5 quarts. And by statute, English sailors got that every day. What happened, unfortunately, when they started sailing into tropical waters is that beer, you know, it wasn't refrigerated or pasteurized and it went off instantly. And they complained bitterly. And then they drank the gentleman's wine. The officers drank wine on shipboard. Much of that went off, but what didn't go off was exhausted very quickly. And suddenly you had a boat full of English people with nothing alcoholic to drink.
Uh-oh.
And that's simply not tolerable. So they had to improvise. And this really comes out of that encounter with the world. It's an improvisation. It's what you do to drink when you're 3,000 or 10,000 miles away from home and there's no wine or beer. You know, the English resisted drinking spirits recreationally up until the 1600s, which is kind of shocking. Everybody else in Northern Europe was boozing it up. But the English were very conservative, and they looked at it as some strange foreign innovation that they didn't want to get to until they made punch. And what they did is they took the spirits and basically made wine out of them. You know, punch was around the strength of wine. It had some of the acidity of wine because of the citrus juice.
So what designates a punch then?
A punch is spirits that have been diluted by water, sharpened by citrus fruit, sweetened with sugar, and have a hint of spice. Just a little bit. Most of the spices that they use would be nutmeg or
cinnamon.
There's some other. Cinnamon sometimes. There are a few exotic ones. Ambergris comes up, which
the
is.
The unctuous.
And that's some strange stuff. It's little lumps. It looks like gravel, but it's clotted whale cholesterol that the whales expel, and then it tumbles through the oceans for months and months and gets purified.
And what kind of flavor does that
lend? It adds a perfumey flavor, very slight. It's not it's not bad in any way. It's used in perfumes mostly, but it is edible.
Ambergris. Well, you see it written. I mean, in ingredients.
It's
I never
very
knew
rare.
What it was.
I had to get it from New Zealand at great expense, shipped, of course, over the internet.
So the English then started making these punches, but they really didn't catch. They weren't that popular. I mean,
it took a while to catch on in England. It caught on very fast in places where sailors went all the time.
Uh-huh.
It caught on in the Caribbean colonies because they had the same problems with getting beer and wine there as you had in India. You know, tropical countries, this stuff doesn't really work very well. And they had plenty of rum, so they drank that.
Rum punches are still
rum punch is the popular one, right? Yeah, rum punch is the American drink.
Right.
It's what built the Americas. So we had plenty of citrus, and we had plenty of rum and plenty of sugar.
Well, some of the drinks that we read about, of course, in colonial American history, mm-hmm. Flips and syllabubs and things, like would those be considered punches?
Oh, no,
actually,
punch was its own thing.
It's like saying,
you know, a martini is a martini the same as a Manhattan.
No.
You know, they're not. They're mm-hmm. different. Punch used to be just one drink, just like that. And then people started playing around with it and getting mixological.
Yes, right.
It's a very strange combination. Yeah.
Floating all kinds of things
in
it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, doing things like putting milk in it and letting the milk curdle and straining it out.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of which, shall I...
Well, yeah, you've brought with you a special kind of punch. And what is this? Tell us about this.
I brought some Norfolk milk punch, which is...
Milk punch. I don't see any milk in there.
Because you put the milk into your punch, and the punch has acidity, and you put hot milk in, and the milk reacts with the acidity and curdles.
So like the lactic acid?
And it looks disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, you get all the curds in there, floating in there, and then you strain it out through a cheesecloth or a new pillowcase or a very, very clean T-shirt, if that's all you've got.
Right.
Anyway, some fine cloth. And it gets rid of all the milk solids, and you get something that will keep indefinitely at cellar temperature, like wine. And it's...
And what we're seeing is a very light, amber, golden, actually, like a oak barreled Chardonnay.
Yeah,
or something.
It's exactly. A very pale Scotch.
And this is made from sugarcane,
From rum and brandy are in here with. I'm trying to remember. This is 2 years old, so it's got Seville oranges and lemons and lemon peel, lemon oil.
And this is from again.
This is called Norfolk Milk Punch, I made this. I used raw milk. And if you smell it,
The brandy's coming through.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And it's just a beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And
perfectly clear.
And how would this be served? Like just exactly?
You could serve it like this.
We have it in a short white wine glass.
Yeah, you could serve it in a sherry glass as a liqueur after dinner.
Yeah,
it's a little as is straight out of the bottle. It's a little thick, but you can also dilute it and add some soda to it or something like that.
Well, let me taste. Tasting on the radio. Ooh, the citrus note. The very first taste, you get those citrus notes come out instantly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, it's a very mild, delicious drink.
It's a mild,
this
delicious
is a
drink.
Danger. This is a
danger. Oh, it is.
As with most punches, this is a dangerous drink because it tastes so good, and it tastes mild, and yet you know that there's stuff in there that's going to sneak up on you.
Well, it's not as strong as a cocktail, I will say.
Well, and that's interesting because that's something you said about in your book about punches, that for a large gathering, for a party or something, punches actually, because you usually have ice in it, mm-hmm. you know, to chill it, that they dilute by the end of the party.
They the more intoxicated your guests get, the weaker their drink
which
gets.
Which is a kind thing to
it,
do
it
to them.
It is a kind
yes.
thing. And they start off also, you know, a well-made punch comes in at about the proof of, you know, it starts out at like the proof of a port or sherry, something like that. Like a fortified wine. It's not as strong as a cocktail. So you can, and you drink it in much smaller cups also.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's the rationale behind using those ridiculous little cups is it stretches out your intake. So punch is meant to be a social beverage. You're supposed to drink it over an evening with your friends. It's the kind of thing in the 18th century that would bring it out after dinner and put it on the table and everybody would share it for the rest of the evening. So it can't be too strong to begin with.
Right.
If it gets weaker, so much the better, because the idea is to have many small cups. Every time you go back to the bowl, you meet somebody else there. If you're circulating around a party, you have a different conversation. Back in the day, they used to drink toasts, and you'd drain your little 2 ounce glasses.
So every time you had a toast to somebody else,
another glass down.
The Chinese banquets,
yeah, exactly,
right?
Yeah. Exactly. But the glasses were small, and the punch was not super intoxicating. So you could drink a number of toasts, and you could go home. You could actually walk home after drinking 16 glasses of punch.
Wow.
Which you couldn't do after drinking 16 cocktails.
No,
at least
for sure,
I couldn't.
For sure. Well, I mean, in holiday time, it's the wassail bowl giving
exactly.
good cheer to everybody,
exactly.
right? And that was always a punch.
And it works wonderfully for that. You know, it's a communal experience. And I see people making more and more punch these days because I think partly because looking around modern American life, our communal experiences are vanishing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not a lot of excuses to come together like that and share something.
Well, now you've been doing the book tour and the book circuit on this book. What, as you travel around the country talking about punch, what are some of the interesting comments or questions that you're getting? Anything in particular?
From the bartenders, they always ask about spice because they want to put their own stamp on these recipes.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to use their own spice mixes, etc. So that's interesting. From other people, from you know, basically home entertainers, what spirits to use. There's a lot of anxiety about that. And also, people are worried about the cost, but it can be expensive to make a big bowl of punch. You don't want to do it all the time. But on the other hand, it's less expensive than stocking a whole bar and having everyone come over.
So you find people are, in fact, receptive to the idea of punch?
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Every book event I've done has had double the RSVPs come. So people are definitely interested.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they're just bringing a friend. Everyone says, well, I'm going to bring a friend to this because...
Well, certainly. I mean, it's in this day and age of cocktails, which we'll talk about later. I mean, it seems to be something people are not satisfied now just to have the ordinary bottle of wine. Well, of course, a nice bottle of wine is always satisfying. But it's more, it's as you said, fun, more celebratory, more, I don't know.
Well, wine is this... amazing thing, but it goes with food.
That's
you know,
right.
It's not as much of a recreational drink. It doesn't have that sort of celebratory thing. It goes in. It's more of a gastronomical experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm half Italian. I look at wine as being a condiment as essential as salt. You know,
yeah.
It's like wine goes with your meal.
Right.
But something like punch is a little more festive. It may be less adapted to go with food, although it goes great with little tidbits. It's a
yeah.
wonderful thing with appetizers, but it really is that has that germ of celebration within it.
Well, and there's so many marvelous accoutrements that you
exactly.
You know, the bowls and the cups and the ladles. Of course, I've also had punch out of plastic old
It doesn't matter
buckets.
What you make it in if it's a good punch.
Yeah.
So, and you know, if it's a bad punch, it also doesn't matter what you make it in. You know?
Well, we're going to talk about some old recipes for punch as well as new recipes and maybe some coming trends when we come back after
Great.
This break.
I believe.
And we are back. Dangerous to go on a break with this milk punch in front of me. I don't know. I'm sipping this between the segments here.
So fortunately, I didn't bring a big jug of it because it would be empty.
It is delicious. I was just commenting how the citrus notes that are coming through are really the oils from like the orange, from the peels.
Well, one of the secrets of punch making that goes back to the 17th century is you extract the oil from the peels of the citrus before you add the juice. And the easiest way of doing it, I find, is to peel your citrus with a, you know, swivel-bladed vegetable peeler and pound it with the sugar and let it sit for hours.
Is that so muddling?
So, yeah, exactly. You muddle it with the sugar and, you know, maybe one peel for every 2 ounces of sugar in the recipe. And you let it sit for, I don't know, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, however long you can wait. And if the peels are good and fresh, the sugar will wick out an enormous amount of bright, fresh citrus oil from the peels.
Definitely.
And it will, the peels will shrink and become candied, and you'll get this sugar slush that they used to call oleosaccharum, which is basically bad Latin for sugar oil. And that stuff is gold, you know, because the nature of punch is to be diluted. You want concentrated flavors to offset that dilution. And that stuff is just the pure, sweet, concentrated essence of the citrus. You can even leave out the juice and just use that, especially for hot
oil.
Punches. That works really well because you don't want the acidity,
Hot orange juice, no. Not
yeah, the corrosive effect of acids is increased by heat. And if you're drinking a lot of hot lemon punch, it really does a number on your throat.
Interesting. It's absolutely delicious. Well, talk to me a little bit about Eric. Arak.
I'm thinking, which Eric?
Yeah, A-R-R-A-C-K.
Okay.
Arak.
Well,
yeah.
Arak is an Arabic word for liquor. And everywhere where the Muslims went or in their cultural sort of sphere, it's the word for liquor. So there is no one kind of Arak. Just like saying, oh, liquor, you know, liquor can be Scotch whiskey, it can be vodka. It doesn't. So it's the same. And the different Araks in the Middle East, the one that we're probably most familiar with in New York, is flavored with anise and done like the same as the anisettes that you'll find in Spain and in the Sambucas and the pastis. You know, that whole Mediterranean basis spirit flavored with anise, slightly sweetened thing. So that's one style. Then in India, especially in southern India and in Sri Lanka, you have arak made from coconut sap, from the sap of certain coconut palms that gives you palm wine, which ferments very rapidly and is distilled to a low proof. That's almost unavailable in the U.S. You can get it occasionally. Sometimes you also get arak made from, especially in Goa, which used to be a big distilling center, you get arak made from cashew fruit, which is one of the more challenging spirits I've ever had. I have a bottle of it that somebody brought me back from there that he's spent a good deal of time tracking
the
down.
The cashew fruit is what the casing that
the casing, exactly. And good, it's it makes for a fairly foul, I think is the word I'm looking for, spirit, but not utterly unredeemable. I've had worse, but it's also fascinating. You know, it was a big article of commerce for a while. Cashew Fenny, it's called. So there's that. The important ones, though, historically for making punch, were the coconut one and arak made from sugarcane, which they made up in Bengal, and they still make rum up there, old monk rum. That probably predates rum distilling in the Caribbean, this tradition. And also, the my favorite is Batavia arak from Indonesia, which is still distilled there by the overseas Chinese population, who are not Muslim and therefore can distill. And it's a Dutch trade. The Dutch have been importing it since.
Now, how does the flavor of that? That's a root.
Essentially a rum, but it's a very, very funky and fragrant rum that's not very good for sipping, but it. The thing about these pungent spirits is in a bowl of punch, they really come into their own. You want full-flavored spirits because you're going to dilute them. You don't want something that's sort of delicate and will get lost in the mix. Vodka punch is very dull.
Yeah, I mean, it's there.
Yeah, you taste the juice.
You know it's there, but you taste the juice,
and you don't have that synergy. But you want things like cognacs, and you can make great punch out of Scotch whiskey, which resists cocktail making, but it works wonderfully in punch.
Oh, interesting.
You can make wonderful punches, you know, from the funkiest rums, the rums that are almost, you know, too insane to drink, because the water will cut the fieriness and sort of dissipate some of the unpleasant aspects. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the intensity of the flavor will flavor the whole bowl. So you'll be able to taste a little booze in there. You'll know that you're drinking booze, but it won't knock you out, at least not right away.
Well, now, what do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite recipe for punches? I mean, there are so many variations, and it really is up in the hand to the hands of the person making the punch. Right?
There are a lot of variations, but the theme itself is very simple. And if I had to say a favorite, I would say I give a generic recipe for making punch in the. I have sort of three sections of the book. The first is history. The second is techniques and ingredients. And the third is individual punches and their stories. My favorite punch is the one in the second part of the book, the techniques one, where I give just a basic punch recipe. That's what I make all the time. And it always works. It's very simple.
And that is?
It's one part sugar, one part citrus juice. And you do the trick with the peels.
Mm-hmm.
In the sugar, and then you add four parts of spirits and 4 to 6 parts of water, mm-hmm. and that's it.
What about
some spice, some nutmeg on top?
And what about the addition of ice?
Well, that goes, you know, obviously it goes back to some degree. It doesn't. The earliest punches didn't have ice.
Right.
They didn't have ice in the
1600s.
Yeah, not sailing around the Caribbean. They didn't, or the Indian Ocean. But it goes back to the 1700s, late 1700s. You start seeing more and more iced punch. I like to make big blocks of ice. That's the traditional way to do it. Or you can make
fancy shapes with flowers in them.
I'm on a doctrinaire. Let's say, mission to abolish punch garnish, because it keeps people from making punch. They think, oh, I've got to make all this garnish blah, blah, blah. It's got to be pretty. I've got to strew...
Or harks back to the, the bridal shower.
Exactly. I've got to strew pomegranate seeds all over the damn thing and, you know, slice this and that and kumquats here and, you know, cherimoya there or something. I don't know. It's whatever. I like to make them pretty plain, but, you know... The other way is fine, too, if you want to spend the time. I don't think it adds much, but it doesn't detract either.
But as it dilutes, I mean, as you said before, as it dilutes, you know, the punch becomes more diluted.
Exactly.
Then you drink it early in the evening.
Yeah, exactly. And it keeps it cold, and it slowly dilutes. I made punch the other night in a huge bowl of ice, so I didn't put any ice in it. That works wonderfully well, too.
Oh, beautiful.
It takes some management to get the bowl. You need a big block of ice.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're skilled at carving ice, you can carve a bowl out of it. Or else you can just get a big block and put a stainless steel bowl full of boiling water on top and keep replenishing the boiling water. And it will.
And that'll do it.
Yeah, it'll eat its way in, and then you'll have your ice bowl. That works well. If I'm serving punch as a sort of a welcome drink, I'll use cubed ice. That was the American way to make punch also. Mm. Our school of punches were very strong. We didn't add a lot of water to them in the 19th century, but they did fill the bowls with pieces of ice halfway before adding the punch. And that will melt very fast and cool the punch.
So the ingredients were combined
With the
intention of being diluted with the cold.
Exactly.
Almost like a some peaty scotches wanting a little bit of water.
Exactly, to open it up.
Yeah.
So the punch base was much stronger than you would get in England. But the idea was you put it in a bowl half full of ice and it will melt most of it, you know, little broken up ice.
Uh-huh.
And you'll get something very cold and delightful very fast.
And then
fast.
Strain it out and then
or
strain
no,
it
you
out
just serve, or... you serve it and drink it fast.
Oh, interesting.
You know, it's best to make many small bowls than... rather than, you know, one large one.
Well, I think punch is a very exciting thing. Do you see it on the rise? I
mean, oh, yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
The whole cocktail revolution.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We've seen this whole renaissance of mixed drinks, the cocktails.
It's amazing. And you know, it's taken off as a home thing as well. But home bartenders, when they're entertaining, and this time of year people entertain a lot, they don't really, it can be a pain to be stuck behind the bar while your party is going and shaking up cocktails. So people have been latching onto this idea of, I'll make a lovely bowl of punch and maybe I'll make a couple cocktails as well, but I'm not chained to the bar, so I can actually be a host and I can circulate and talk to all my guests and manage the party rather than being stuck there making drinks for the few people who want 16 cocktails each.
Exactly. And of course, now that we are more cocktail attuned and the as you say, the resurgence of mixed drinks, punch is not the bowl to avoid anymore if people know that it's being
If it's a good punch, you know, you make it. I see it's being used also in bars in lieu of bottle service, thank God.
Oh, interesting.
Which, you know, bottle service is pretty abominable. You get a bottle of vodka and a couple, like, sad little containers of juice, and they basically say mix your own drink for $450. For that money, you might as well get a big bowl of punch and have something delicious.
Yeah.
And that's starting to pop up quite all over the place.
Oh, interesting. So, I mean, you have really established quite a reputation over the past 10 years. With cocktails and mixed drinks. Well, the whole started with your Jerry Thomas, all the research. You're quite a historian, I must say, too.
Well, thank you
historian, excellent writer. But, yeah, you started mixing drinks for different people and then got quite a reputation. And you are on demand with a lot of restaurants as well and bars.
Well, I've been very fortunate.
Well, you've created a lot of new drinks and original drinks. When you are creating a new cocktail, or it could be a punch too, what do you look for? What flavors? What are you looking for to when you create something new?
I mostly work with patterns. You know, there are a few great simple patterns that cocktails fall into. And you can run variations on those if you have interesting products to work with and interesting flavor combinations. One of the recent ones I've been enjoying is a pattern is one part each of citrus juice, liqueur, and nothing too creamy or, you know, weird, just sort of the old line liqueurs. So one part citrus, one part liqueur, one part Aperol, the Italian aperitif.
Very sweet.
but very low proof, though. You know, also it's only 11% alcohol, so it's pretty gentle. So one part each of those, and then three parts of liqueur, and you shake that up, and the Aperol sort of bridges between the sweetness of the liqueur and the sourness of the citrus juice, and you get a very nice integrated cocktail 90% of the time or 80% of the time.
And what do you call that?
It depends. Yeah. It depends on what ingredients you put in. I mean, that's how, you know, the 19th century, you look at the great drinks, the martini and the Manhattan are essentially twins.
Exactly.
You know?
But when the cocktail first came to be, I mean, they're pretty good combinations. It's kind of hard to improve on those in certain ways.
You know, you take the original pattern of the Manhattan was maybe two parts of liquor, one part sweet wine, you know, fortified wine, or a little spoonful of liqueur. The original Manhattans had a splash of maraschino in them sometimes, or a splash of curacao, and a couple dashes of bitters, and you start making substitutions. It's very easy.
Interesting.
You know, instead of vermouth, I'll try sherry or port or Madeira or something like Aperol. You know,
Madeira.
Madeira is underused in cocktails. It's
underused in general. It used to be, you know, a very common thing, even in finishing sauces.
I know.
We don't use it that much.
No, it works wonderfully with the more subtle spirits. I like to combine it with Irish whiskey. It just works fantastically well because Irish whiskey gets overwhelmed if you mix it with other things usually.
Yeah.
So it's very nice. It's fun to you get, as long as you establish a few simple patterns like that, you can play around endlessly. And then, you know, then there's some drinks that just come out of nowhere and you're just say, I just found this looks great, let me mix it with that. Yeah. You know?
The thing is to have a little tape recorder, something to write it down.
Yeah, I always write down my recipes.
What did I just do? I know.
I always write them down. If they're anywhere even close to palatable, I have a little notebook and I write it down and then I revisit them every few months.
Dishes I've made, food, yeah. It happens the same thing with food. People say, oh, what was the recipe for that? And I go, I didn't write it down. Yeah.
Once you're cooking improvisationally, you know, you really need that so that record there.
Well, see, the problem is I'm probably drinking along with it, and that's
that's a problem too. Yeah.
Well, I congratulate you on this book.
Well,
first,
thank you
also
so much.
I want to also comment on the wonderful photographs. The art of William Hogarth, I would not have known if it weren't for your books and your
oh my goodness, William
and
Hogarth.
A
lot of it is from the British Museum, actually. I had to go over there and look through their collection and get them to scan some things, and it was a very fun little research thing.
Well,
their
picture,
collection is utterly stupendous.
I mean, the picture on the cover is both educational and hilarious.
Well, it's a Hogarth engraving called Modern Midnight Conversation, or a Midnight Modern Conversation. I can never remember which order he put those two in. It's funny, and it shows a pack of bewigged, periwigged gents sitting around a huge bowl of punch
in various degrees of
utter inebriation.
Inebriation, definitely. And the bowl is still flowing, I might add.
And the funny thing is, actually, that engraving immediately, it came out in 1730, and it was immediately painted on punch bowls.
Oh my goodness! Wow.
Which I would kill for one of those.
Yeah.
But,
I'll bet.
You know, those are 10,000-pound antiques now.
Wow. Yeah.
So, what can you do?
That's great. Well, if there's a punch being served that was mixed by you, I would definitely not walk by the punch bowl. I would definitely taste the punch from that punch bowl.
Well, you'd find me there too.
And as always, it was a pleasure to have you with me.
It was a pleasure to be
here.
And
I learned so much from this book, and always learn a lot from you. And I thank you very much for sharing with us.
Well, thank you so much. This is super pleasant.
Thank our listeners for tuning in. Again, I'm Linda Palacio. This has been A Taste of the Past.